What are the rudiments? If we were to turn to Miscellaneous Writings, page 43, we should come to the question, do all who at present claim to be teaching Christian Science teach it correctly? And the answer would be, by no means. But it would go on to say, how honest students speak the truth according to the pattern showed to thee in the mount, that these are not working for emoluments, and may profitably teach people who are ready to investigate this subject the rudiments of Christian Science. All right. What then is the pattern showed to thee in the mount? Well, we find it specified in Exodus 25. Remember, and thou shalt make a candlestick of pure gold. 6 branches shall come out of the sides of it. 3 branches out of the one side, and 3 branches out of the other side. And the candlestick, in the candlestick, shall be 4 bowls. And thou shalt make the 7 lamps thereof, that they may give light. And look, that thou make them after their pattern, which was showed thee in the mount. Well, the mount is certainly the Horeb height of that first question and answer in the coming chapter recapitulation, where what God is revealed. Namely, God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite, mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. This is the I am that I am. And when we look at it from the standpoint of the principle in the middle, with the 3 branches of mind, spirit, and soul on the one side, and the 3 branches of life, truth, and love on the other, it becomes to us what is called the science order of the synonymous terms for God, the golden candlestick or the tree of life. It embodies all the rudiments. And this is the reason that recapitulation became the teaching chapter, or what it is that is taught. That having been established first the standpoint from which to teach it in chapter 13. Well, this essential standpoint is now summarized for us on the last 3 pages of this chapter. First, in terms of spiritual anatomy, on line 20, or the need to know thyself, not being ignorant of thyself like mortal mind is. Teach the student he must know himself, he must be honest with himself. There must, from the spiritual standpoint, be honest mental self-knowledge. Down there on line 20. because the word anatomy, from to cut, to dissect, signifies structural analysis, the structural makeup of an organism, says the dictionary, the division of anything to examine its parts. Well, what the divine system is concerned with is analysis, but without division. Synthesis, without bringing together separated bits and pieces. Then involved in spiritual anatomy is the essential excision of error. 925. Through knowing whether thoughts are from the divine or the human source, the anatomy of Christian Science, the structural analysis of the divine system itself, teaches when and how to probe the self-inflicted wounds of selfishness, malice, envy, hate. How to control mad ambition. It unfolds the hallowed influences of unselfishness, philanthropy, spiritual love. It urges the government of the body in both sickness and health. 463, if it doesn't do these things, then the analysis of the divine system certainly becomes a hollow mockery and an intellectual abstraction. But understanding mental anatomy, the Christian Scientist discerns and deals with the real cause of disease, that which is self-inflicted, and hence the need for a true mental self-knowledge. Can't you hear Jesus saying, "Take, eat, this is my body"? Let me analyze the divine system for you so that you can understand and assimilate it according to its own natural divine order of precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little, there a little, as we shall have it in a moment in the 24 questions and answers of recapitulation, and in order that error can be self-seen and so excised. Because now it is that the anatomy of Christian Science and the birth-giving obstetrics of Christian Science are one. Not only should teacher and student be familiar with the anatomy of Christian Science, but they should also, 463.6, be familiar with the obstetrics taught by this science. In other words, science not only teaches anatomy, it also teaches obstetrics. We can't give birth unless there be a body to do the birthing, can we? And thus the relation of teacher and student is really that of mother to child. Obstetrics, from the root to stand before as a midwife. Now, not the apocalyptic dragon as midwife standing before the woman, ready to devour the child, but the woman herself as midwife, standing before God, giving her child back to God. Thou son of man, my son, art the son of the living God. Unto us, the undivided body of Christian Science, the Son of God, is born. Obstetrics, then, from the same root as obstacle, obstruction. Error has to be excised. error must be excised. Scientific obstetrics removes properly, in the word of the platform, a dam or obstruction, even the supposed separation of man from God, and the obstacle which the serpent's sin would impose between man and his creator. So the true teaching, true birth, educare, education to draw forth, draws the child forth from God, from the text of Science and Health, in practical terms, recapitulated in the next chapter. Detach mortal thought, therefore, from its material conceptions that the birth will be natural and safe. No mediumistic midwifery persona at work, no personal mothering or birth giving. Then no injury to the present useful, even if apparently organic, human surroundings. Having within it no element of error, no element of separation from God, the truth, little t, that is born of truth and love, removes properly whatever is offensive. And this word offense is used in the Bible, as we found in Twee, as a stumbling stone, an occasion for stumbling. It's an impediment to progress. In a word, it's the heel, biting, serpent, or the great red dragon. Now in Romans, Paul quotes, "Behold, I lay in Zion a stumbling stone and rock of offense. For they stumbled at that stumbling stone." But in 1 Peter, in exactly the same words, "Behold, I lay in Zion a chief cornerstone. Unto you that believe, he is precious. But to them which be disobedient, the stone which the builders rejected, the same is made the headstone of the corner, and a stone of stumbling, and a rock of offense, even to them which stumble at the word." You see, this stone, which can either be a precious corner or foundation stone, or else a stone of stumbling, is found, when we come to recapitulation, in the answer to the question, what is God? So the new idea on line 14, this precious headstone, capstone, this system of capitalized names for God, must be conceived and born of truth and love, as the sun that never leaves the mother's womb, conceived and born of truth and love. Then it's clad, like his mother, in white garments, the white light of the sun. So it's all a matter of new birth. We are this Christian Science infant born of the Spirit, and therefore are the Spirit, uncapitalized, causing, mothering humanity to suffer no more sea, no more death, as it is in the 13th section of the Apocalypse corresponding to this 13th chapter. And therefore, truth is here, fulfilling its perfect work, according to the order, that is, of the 7 days of creation, the order of spiritual birth. Remember back on 454, line 22, wait patiently for divine love to move upon the waters of mortal mind and form the perfect concept. Patience must have her perfect work. It comes from James chapter 1. Let patience have her perfect work, that ye may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing, that ye may be a man of spiritual integrity. I do not want. You see, it'll all come through to at the end of the apocalypse. Of his, God's own will, not the human will, James says, begat he us with the word of truth, that we should be a kind of first fruits of his creatures. Now, the unhesitating decision called for there in the marginal heading on line 23 of 463 refers us back to the necessary excision of error in the paragraph on mental anatomy. Error healed through mind means no breakup of the one mind into mind's many. That's going to be one of the great keynotes of recapitulation, isn't it? This is the very law of God applicable to healing. In contrast to laws of nature, laws of matter, or the action of so-called mortal mind. In fact, this paragraph at the bottom of 463 relates to anatomy defined just as the next one certainly does to scientific obstetrics. The one called, as we turn over the page to the last page, 464, seclusion of the author in the marginal heading. See, Mrs. Eddy once said, it is as necessary for me to remain at home for the well-being of the Christian Science movement as for the hub of a wheel not to move out to the circumference. You see, it was a matter of scientific obstetrics. She was at home in divine truth and love, attending properly the birth of the new child or divine idea. She was in seclusion, detaching mortal thought from its material conceptions, that the birth might be natural and safe, and the mother because no more suffering, no more labor, no more travail, no more time, no more toil. As you come down that paragraph, the way she was praying, watching, and working for the redemption of mankind, the way we have to be praying, watching, working for the redemption of mankind, seeking no self-aggrandizement, well, that's almost identical, isn't it, with the way the first chapter prayer, and therefore the textbook itself, and therefore Christian Science itself, opens. Remember, on page one, prayer, watching and working, combined with self-immolation, are God's gracious means for accomplishing whatever has been successfully done for the Christianization and health of mankind. So clearly it's scientific obstetrics that's at work, isn't it? And then the reference to the hypodermic injection being permissible in certain cases to lull the belief in pain takes us back to the chapter's opening paragraph on the permitted right use, you remember, of temporary and eternal means. doesn't it? The purpose is always to enable the Christian Scientist to treat himself mentally, line 15, to handle his own case mentally, line 18. That's to say, to be a law to himself through his unity with truth instead of possibly being humanly indoctrinated from outside, which means that he proves all things and holds fast that which is good. We know where that comes from. It's from 1 Thessalonians 5. It's where Paul says, "The day of the Lord so cometh as a thief in the night." Hence the need to watch. "For when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction cometh upon them as travail upon a woman with child. But ye are all the children of light and children of the day. We're not of the night nor of darkness. No more see, no more latent, psychic, unconscious, the source of all error's visible forms. God hath appointed us to wrath, not appointed us to wrath, but to obtain salvation. Wherefore, comfort yourselves together. Edify one another, prove all things," is the actual quote, "and hold fast that which is good." And so to the final paragraph. Because it's clear now that what the founder, through her scientific obstetrics, has founded, line 21, is a pathological system of Christianity. Of course, for it to be a pathological system, it must be the science of Christianity, or Christian Science. Now, in this birth-giving, founding mission, the labor, the travail, has been to expound divine principle and not to exalt personality, with all its bigotry, ignorance, envy, and dishonesty, all its adulterating falsities, which are typical of the hireling. Now we know from John chapter 10, which is the story of the good shepherd versus the dishonest hireling, that the hireling is that state of thought which cares not for the sheep and which flees in the presence of the true founder, the true shepherd, the true pastor, or the true mother, the teacher. He cares for the fees, not for the student's morals. Remember how that was, how that came earlier in the chapter. So Jesus says, "There shall be one fold and one shepherd. My sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. And I give unto them eternal life. I and my Father are one." And therefore the one fold which the one shepherd has founded for mankind as a pathological system of Christianity is, on the final line, a scientific system of ethics. Something which we must never lose sight of when we come to consider much more specifically the system itself, its constituents and relationships, in the chapter Recapitulation. Now what we will do is again to merge without a break into the new chapter, because this is what seems to be demanded with these later chapters of the textbook, so interwoven, so flowing are they from one to the other, that it's good for us to do just that, flow straight away from one into the other. Recapitulation then, the 14th chapter, adjacent to which, when we look across that second row of chapters in the textbook's four-square matrix structure, is the platform of divine metaphysics. Now we do appreciate, don't we, that marvelous Christ row of chapters. Chapter 2, Atonement and Eucharist. Chapter 6, Science, Theology, Medicine. Chapter 10, The Science of Being, ending with the platform. And chapter 14, Recapitulation. In Atonement and Eucharist, Jesus, the great model of being, the example for us all, who in its entirety solves individually the universal life problem, proves from beginning to end that good is all and evil is naught, and therefore that life is birthless, deathless. Science, Theology, Medicine, the revelation of Christian Science, leavening the whole lump of human consciousness, the very science of Jesus' words and works, making his demonstration of deathless life available to the rest of mankind. Science of being. What everything, everywhere, all at once, is in consequence being. All of us understanding what to do and getting on with doing it. That is to say, learning to stand together on the Jesus platform of divine metaphysics. Recapitulation. What it is that is doing it all. What it is that is at work in the case of Jesus, as in the case of Christian Science. Namely, what the science of being actually consists of. What God is. The self-revelation of infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. All right then, let's now move from the 13th to the 14th chapter. Let's acquaint ourselves more deeply, more precisely than ever before with the absolute science of this system of ethics, which has been discovered and founded in world consciousness and named Christian Science. Now, turning to the introductory note on page 465 there, we see that the chapter stems from Mrs. Eddy's early class book, which, as we said before, was entitled The Science of Man, by which the sick are healed, or Questions and Answers in Moral Science. Now, after much labor, much travail, much birth-giving, much scientific obstetrics, and increased spiritual understanding, there in the text, This early manuscript gave rise in 1875 to the first edition of the textbook Science and Health. It was incorporated as one of the actual chapters of Science and Health in the third edition of 1881 when it was renamed Recapitulation. Absolute Christian Science. Christian Science in its pure, birthless, deathless reality pervades the chapter statements to elucidate scientific metaphysics. To make clear, that is, the non-existence of semi-metaphysics, and therefore the total reality of divine metaphysics. That's what we learned, didn't we, from the chapter Science of Being. So inasmuch then as Science and Health is rooted in the original Science of Man class book, and inasmuch as Science and Health as a whole is summarized or recapitulated in that wherein it originated, now the 14th chapter, Recapitulation, it's evident that recapitulation represents the beginning, the end, and indeed the totality of Science and Health, and therefore of Christian Science itself. In other words, Christian Science has always been, is now, always will be, based on the answer to the question, what is God? Now, it wasn't until the 50th edition of 1891 that the answer to this question appeared in the form of a range of capitalized synonymous terms for God. And this coincided, naturally, with the appearing for the first time also of the now famous statement, divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system. Hitherto, it had been said that the theology of Christian Science underlay the statements of recapitulation. But from this point onwards, it was absolute Christian Science that was underlying them or permeating them. Once a system of capitalized synonymous terms are found to elucidate what God is, then what God speaks, theologos, theology, is absolute Christian Science. You see, at that time, the answer read, God is divine principle, supreme incorporeal being, mind, spirit, soul, life, truth, love. It included an eighth synonym, being. And this was so until 1907, when for the first time the answer to the question appeared in its final form as we have it today, namely, God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. The order of the synonyms rearranged and the term being removed. Placed, let's note, in the answer to the third question where it had not been before. Now why? Because the new statement of the one principle is what being, capitalized, is. You see, as recorded in the Science and Health preface, Mrs. Eddy had, in June 1907, read the book throughout consecutively for the first time in order, she says, to elucidate her idealism. Well, this idealism was elucidated when, in consequence, the statement of what God is was finalized. You see, the text itself, having virtually been finalized in that 50th edition of 1891, and the final ordering of the chapters in their present four-square matrix pattern having taken place in the 226th edition of 1902, and the finalizing of the terms that had to be capitalized and those that had to be uncapitalized having taken place in 1903 and thereabouts, the book was virtually finished when she read it through from beginning to end in 1907. She found the final answer to what God is in the book itself. The book itself told her what it was. Twenty-four questions and answers, 24 ribs in the human body. Adam's rib was restored to him. Man was given back his womanhood. God was given back his idea, man. Through the understanding that no such severance had ever really taken place. The rib, the rod, the terms in their primal and ultimate scientific order was already there in the body of the book and had only to be stated in their simple, basic form to make this evident. Now, as it says in the story of Adam in the chapter Genesis, it's on page 529, another change, that is to say, a change in obstetrics, if we were to read that paragraph, will come as to the nature and origin of man. And this revelation will destroy the dream of existence. Reinstate reality will restore the rib to Adam. Usher in science and the glorious fact of creation that both man and woman proceed from God and are his eternal children belonging to no lesser parent. Well, this change in obstetrics took place ideally in 1907 when reality, now that's the uncapitalized order of the third degree of scientific translation on page 116, isn't it? When reality found correspondence with the capitalized order of the synonymous terms for God on page 465. Capitalized and uncapitalized, one. Principle capitalized and its idea uncapitalized is not even are, one. Incidentally, that statement had been made for the first time only just previously in one of the 1907 editions. Science itself was ushered in. The Adamic dream of organic subdivision, organic procreation, could end. Man and woman one could be found, conceived, and born of truth and love, and proceeding from no less a parent. How colossal, then, is the work of John Dawley in the years following the Founder's mission. That mission being represented in the textbook as closing at the point of the 12th chapter, because there Christian scientists are a law to themselves and don't need outside mothering. John Dawley taught. That's the 13th chapter. The profound signification of recapitulation. The 14th chapter. And in so doing, unlocked the science of the scriptures. 15th and 16th chapters. Isn't that just what he did? You see, recapitulation was always in what was called in the organization the primary class. It was always the teaching chapter. What the student was actually taught in order to qualify him a Christian scientist, how to be a law unto himself. Within the holy, ethical, and Christian atmosphere, if you like, of the 13th chapter, the teaching of the scientific system of the synonymous terms for God in the 14th chapter properly takes place. Safe from the intellectual thrill of metaphysical abstractionism, safe from being grasped merely by the human mind. It was in the so-called normal class in the organization that recapitulation was combined with the platform. The two, as we've seen, being adjacent in that Christ row of chapters in the matrix for the purpose of making teachers qualified to teach. Hence the wonderful scientific relation which will surely be brought to light between the 32 planks of the platform and the 24 questions and answers of recapitulation. Something indeed for us expectantly to pray about. Well, now, the meaning of the word recapitulation has then already begun to be apparent. Its root is re plus capitulum, meaning a small head. And it means to repeat or restate briefly as the principal points in a discourse, to summarize a concise summary. Involved then is the word capital, from caput, head, having reference to the head. What we are concerned with, we see, is the head and body of Christ or truth. capitalized, uncapitalized, one and indivisible. Principle and its idea, one. Well, a capitalist is one who owns capital. In divine metaphysics, principle, God, is the one and only capitalist, owning the infinitude of the capital resources represented by its governmental system of capitalization. In politics and economics, capitalism is always contrasted with socialism and communism, isn't it? Where the state, not God, owns all capital. The state purporting, of course, to be the people as a whole. But that isn't the way it works out in practice. Can we see then that what Christian Science brings to light is a governmental system in which the individual and the collective are not at variance, not at each other's throats, where principle God owns all, and its idea man has all by reflection, but not by acquisitive possession. In other words, the principle, the capital, where the accent is on God being infinite and unexpendable, the income of ideas flowing from this capital, where the accent is on man, is equally infinite and unexpendable. And therefore, Christian Science is divine economics, in which the individual and the collective developing into the universal, are one and complementary, and as such are the answer to the divisive world situation and indeed to every conceivable aspect of the divisibility and consequent discords of life. No wonder the platform's final sevenfold paragraph tells us how one infinite God, good, unifies men and nations, firstly, constitutes the brotherhood of man, secondly. See, recapitulation, as we have found, has so much to do with the brotherhood of man. Ends wars, thirdly. Fulfills the scripture, love thy neighbor as thyself, fourthly. Annihilates pagan and Christian idolatry, whatever is wrong in social, civil, criminal, political, and religious codes, fifthly. Equalizes the sexes, sixthly. And leaves nothing that can sin, suffer, be punished, or destroyed, seventhly. And so no wonder this sevenfold epitome of reality in the platform opens immediately on that Christ horizontal of the matrix, to that which determines this unity and brings it to pass, namely the sevenfold definition of the one infinite God, good, as mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love, bringing to a focus all the rudiments of Christian Science in the pattern of the golden candlestick shown to thee in the mount. All right then, let's turn to the verse from Isaiah on which the chapter as a whole is based. It's taken from Isaiah 28, which reads like this. How natural it is, how inevitable. Whom shall he teach knowledge? And whom shall he make to understand doctrine? Now listen to this. Them that are weaned from the milk and drawn from the breasts, those who do not rely on external mothering. Now here is the actual quote, for precept must be upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line, here a little and there a little. The word of the Lord, what I, God, am, was unto them precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line, here a little and there a little. Wherefore, hear the word of the Lord. Thus saith the Lord God, behold, I lay in Zion a stone, a tried stone, a precious cornerstone, a sure foundation. But this is only if we regard the stone rightly, spiritually. Because as we read before, if we regard it wrongly and materially, this very same stone can become a stone of stumbling and a rock of offense. Didn't we read that in the epistles? But Isaiah goes on, judgment will I lay to the line and righteousness to the plummet, and your covenant with death shall be disannulled. His God doth instruct him to discretion and doth teach him. In other words, we must be taught of God and not be taught of men. Well, we can scarcely fail, can we, to connect this with what Zechariah has to say, the prophet Zechariah, speaking in so very similar a vein. Zechariah says, I will bring forth my servant the branch. Now the branch is the symbol in Mrs. Eddy's church organization of the self-governing branch church. And Zechariah says, behold the stone, same concept, that I have laid before Joshua, upon one stone shall be seven eyes. Now remember, it was Joshua, not Moses, the motherly leader, who actually took the children of Israel into the promised land. And it's the same, historically speaking, with the two phases of the story of Christian Science. Mrs. Eddy took us to the promised land gave us all the spiritual equipment we needed. But it was John Dawley who really initiated the crossing of the Jordan and our beginning to take possession. So, says Zechariah, behold a candlestick, all of gold, and his seven lamps thereon. Remember with Moses in Exodus 25, and thou shalt make a candlestick of pure gold, six branches shall come out of the sides of it, three branches out of the one side, three branches out of the other side, and in the candlestick shall be four bowls, and thou shalt make the seven lamps thereof, that they may give light. Zechariah says, and he shall bring forth the headstone. The headstone, the capstone, the capitalization stone found in the answer to the first of the 24 questions. He shall bring forth the headstone with shoutings, crying, grace, grace unto it. Don't we all feel like shouting, grace, grace, thank you for the answer to the question, what is God? The hands of Zerubbabel, Zerubbabel is that state of thought that comes out of Babylonian captivity, hath laid the foundations of this house, and his hand shall finish it. There you have indicated the two inseparable phases of the Christian Science story, the laying of the foundations and the finishing of the house, the city. They shall see the plummet in the hands of Zerubbabel with these seven. They, the seven synonymous terms for God, are the eyes of the Lord which run to and fro throughout the earth. Let's never stop seeing them running to and fro throughout the earth. But most of all, in this connection, we remember the book of Revelation. In Revelation 4, and behold, a throne was set in heaven, and one sat on the throne, one absolute God, to look upon like a jasper and a sardine stone. And there was a rainbow, a sevenfold spectrum, round about the throne. And round about the throne were 24 seats. 24 questions. And upon the seats were 24 elders sitting. 24 answers to these questions, clothed in white raiment, and they had on their heads, capitalized, crowns of gold. And there were seven lamps of fire burning before the throne, which are the seven spirits of God. The seven capitalized terms. And four beasts. The word Christ, Christianity, science, full of eyes before and behind. And the four beasts had each of them six wings about them. 4 × 6, 24. And so our conclusion that the 24 questions and answers, as it were, wing themselves forward in four groups of six each. That was the conclusion we came to, wasn't it? The first group accenting the word, the second group the Christ, the third group Christianity, and the fourth group science. 4 and 20 questions and answers. 4 groups of 6 each. Constituting the order of the chapter. And when these beasts give glory and honor and thanks to him that sitteth on the throne, the 24 elders fall down. They capitulate before him, the one that sat on the throne. And actually, in the course of Revelation, they seem to do this 7 times. They go on and on, recapitulating. And they cast their crowns before the throne, saying, Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for Thou hast created all things, and for Thy pleasure they were and are created. And then, just to show how near we are in the flow to chapters 15 and 16 in the Key to the Scriptures, see how Revelation goes on. And I saw in the right hand of him that sat upon the throne a book sealed with 7 seals. The Bible in its 7,000-year periods that needs to be unlocked by the 7 timeless days of creation. And in the midst of the throne and of the 4 beasts, and in the midst of the elders, stood a lamb, as it had been slain. 7 days of Genesis resurrected above the Adam record. This lamb having 7 horns and 7 eyes, which are the 7 spirits of God, the 7 synonymous terms, sent forth into all the earth. And the 4 beasts and the 24 elders fall down. This is where they capitulate again before the Lamb. And they sing a new song, saying, Thou art worthy to take the book and to open the seals thereof, for Thou wast slain and hast redeemed us by Thy blood out of every kindred, tongue, and people, and nation, and has made us unto our God kings and priests, and we shall reign on the earth. Generic man, my successor in leadership. Resulting, of course, in the true society of the city foursquare in Revelation 21. One infinite God good unifies men and nations, and so on. So now to these 7 lamps of fire, these 7 spirits of God, this 1 stone or calculus of ideas with its 7 eyes, this golden candlestick with its 4 bowls and 7 lamps, this timeless tree of life, this answer to the question, what is God?